The thing about cash flow and buying cash producing properties is, yeah, maybe one property you're not going to retire off of, but after 10, 15, 20 of them, it really adds up. And yeah, maybe you're making $2,000 a month per property, but if you have a handful of those, that could easily end up being, you know, $20, $30, $40, $50,000 a month. And that's a pretty good living.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Jonathan Barr started his real estate career just after the 2008 recession. He's been involved in over 400 residential flips in the competitive LA market. He's also been in ground-up development and repossessions and is now 100% focused on multifamily properties. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam. Thanks for having me.
Hey, man, the pleasure's mine. The same three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. Can you quickly tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Sure. So I grew up in a real estate family, so I've kind of always been around it. My daycare was my mom's office, went to open houses as a kid. After that 2008 recession, I joined the family business, which was a flip business. And we started going to the foreclosure auction. So I was in charge of that. We were buying about 7-8 homes at one point in Los Angeles a month. So we were buying quite a bit.
Yeah.
When that started to dry up a bit, we started to get into some ground up stuff. So we did some development stuff near downtown Los Angeles. We also had a small portfolio of smaller 1-4 unit properties that we held onto and that I leased and managed myself. So I've kind of been in the trenches and dealing with tenants and all that and rent control in LA. Yeah. So I bought a few duplexes in 2010, 11, 12. That appreciated about 400% over that 10-year period. Ended up selling one of those and buying a building in Kansas City and quadrupled my cash flow. And I was like, holy crap, I need to do more of that. And since then, we've bought a couple more buildings in Oklahoma City. And we have a third one in Oklahoma City under contract right now, 118 units. So most of it, about half of the money's come from us. Other half, we have been raising from other people. And we're just kind of keeping it going, doing a few deals a year right now.
Wow. That's fantastic. I mean, to do 400 residential flips, I mean, that's a lot.
It was insane. Yeah. It was fun. It was fun. I mean, there was a lot of good deals back then, you know, especially looking back now, I was like, holy crap.
Don't you wish you'd held on?
If we would have held on to a quarter of them, I wouldn't have to lift a finger today.
Right. Yeah. That's salt in the wound, but it's like, you don't know what you don't know. And I think I've had a lot of guests who've come on the show and not many. That was how I cut my teeth, was buying at the foreclosure auctions as well. It's actually the first thought was at a foreclosure auction. And so I haven't had many people come on that have known kind of what that happened in those markets. Can you tell us why the deal flow kind of dried up and really what happened?
Foreclosures dried up. I mean, this wasn't foreclosures anymore. REOs, short sales, the auctions, even the stuff. And because there was less at the auctions, they started getting bid up a lot more than they did before. And there was more bidders and more competition and the flip shows and like all that kind of stuff. We were still doing it, but we were doing less deals. But what we ended up doing was, now that we were doing less deals, we were going into more niche areas and doing higher design and making more profit per deal to kind of make up for that.
Got it. Do less, make more per deal. That's really interesting. I think one of the other things that we saw happen was hedge funds came to town.
Yeah, big time.
I literally remember bidding at an auction and they were paying, I think I calculated 98 cents on the after repair value at an auction on the dollar, 98 cents on the dollar.
They're just trying to park money and make fees.
Yeah, for a house I'd never seen the inside of. And I'm like, wait, so this house might be worth 200 grand and you just gave 196,000 for it and you still got to remodel it and you've never seen the inside.
And has foundation issues and you're going to have a big loss.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I can't compete with this. I think that's when I hung up the cleats at the auctions. I was like, I'm done.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's really fascinating. I mean, so you told us kind of the why. You said, hey, look, I sold a duplex and I bought a building and I made four times the cash flow. There's got to be more to that. So was that the pivotal moment when you said, let's just shift strategy?
Yes, I would say that's the catalyst of it. But it happened before then because I bought that duplex that I lived in myself that appreciated a ton and I was able to live for free. And I just saw the power of income producing property and long-term holding and what that could be like, instead of just flipping every little thing every 3 to 6 months.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a tough one, a tough habit to get off of. The big wins, you know?
Yeah, the hit is good.
The hit is good, man. Yeah, I use a drug analogy. Like, that's a pretty good hit. Like, holy smokes. And once you do that once, it is addictive. It's like, oh, we could just keep doing that. Talk to us about the cash flow and maybe how your mindset has shifted towards more cash flow and away from the getting cash in chunks.
Yeah. Well, the thing about cash flow and buying cash producing properties is, yeah, maybe one property you're not going to retire off of, but after 10, 15, 20 of them, it really adds up. And yeah, maybe you're making $2,000 a month per property, but if you have a handful of those, that could easily end up being, you know, $20, $30, $40, $50,000 a month. And that's a pretty good living.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's really cool. What have been some strategies you guys have used to scale, especially, you know, buying out of state and a long way out of state at that?
Just doing a lot of the stuff that we were doing before in the flip business, you know, having good broker contacts, having really good follow-up, doing some owner outreach, talking to our neighbors, talking to other business leaders in the community. Now that we've had a few deals in Oklahoma City, we're getting to know attorneys and different people that have some kind of sway in the city. And that's the cool thing about Oklahoma City is that it's big enough to have enough product and inventory to do business, but it's not so big that like everyone kind of knows each other and everyone that's doing something kind of knows each other. And like you can make a couple phone calls and kind of move the needle if you need to.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's a tertiary market, so you get that kind of hometown feel to it, but yet it's big enough to where there's enough room for people to play in the sandbox and make money.
Exactly. And people are friendly and they want to help you and they want people to bring money there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Was it Tulsa that was running the move to Tulsa and you got like 10 grand or something? What was that? You remember that?
For like tech jobs, I think, or remote jobs. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, you move here and we'll pay you 10 grand and for remote workers. I was like, this is crazy.
Yeah, I actually talked to someone that actually took advantage of that.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So it wasn't just hearsay. I remember reading about it.
No, it's a real thing. I think it's still going too.
Wow.
Yeah. So if you move to Tulsa to work there remotely, you could potentially get 10 grand.
Talk to us about growing your business. I know you said you made the contacts there on the ground, but what were some challenges you guys have faced in scaling your multifamily holdings there?
I mean, I think actually finding good deals. I think the market's pretty crazy right now. And, you know, you got to look at 50, sometimes 100 deals before you find one that makes sense. And I think the other thing that's made us successful is now that we have a few properties, we really know intimately how we could push rents and what expenses look like, where we can cut. Do we need this much staffing? Can we share a maintenance guy with the other property that our manager is managing down the street? And then like different nuances, like, hey, what's the difference between a 70s and 80s build and insurance costs? That's significant, especially in Oklahoma. So little things like that can make a substantial difference. Like a $20,000 difference in insurance premium goes a long way.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That's not something I would have thought about right out of the gate. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, those are small things that add up. Talk to us about some things you guys feel like you've done right as you guys have scaled that other people should emulate.
I think people don't focus enough on asset management. I think that's where we've done really well in operations, budgeting, make sure to review monthly budgets, having weekly calls with our property manager and KPI reporting, and really having like really working as a team with our manager. Like, I don't feel like they work for us. I feel like we're doing it together, you know? Like we assist them, they assist us, they give us the information we need. They're our eyes and ears, but it's a team. It's not they work for us.
Right. You
know? I mean, they do ultimately work for us, but
yeah. Sure. Are you guys self-managing or do you have third-party property management?
We have third-party property management, but they're also own some properties in Oklahoma. So they kind of have that owner mindset and more of like, it feels more of a partnership than that, which we like.
Right. Yeah. And that's not very common, I don't think, to find a management company that also self-owns. Or maybe I'm missing something there, but I feel like a lot of the larger
I think sometimes you'll find they'll have some kind of interest. I know they're also selling some of their properties and they're focusing more on third party. We're actually their first third party client in the market.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. But we like that because, you know, we were growing in the market, they are growing in the market. And so they're kind of letting us steer the ship a little bit and kind of ask for certain things because it was early on in the process with them and we can kind of grow together.
Right, right. That's absolutely fantastic. What do you see is the long-term, like when you look at multifamily as an asset class, like where do you see it going in the next 2 to 4 years?
I mean, I think in the next year, it's still going to be look pretty good. But I mean, the COVID supposed downturn was basically not a downturn. And I feel like we're still due for something.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe we'll see what happens to rates. We'll see what happens with inflation and the general economy. It's hard to really tell, but we're just always guarding our downside risk. And we basically are careful with the amount of debt. And we want to be able to take like a 30% hit to income and still break even to be able to be in a really solid place.
Right. Yeah, that's a tough one to underwrite, but I think that's really smart.
Yeah, I mean, it's challenging and but in the right deals, we're able to make it work. It sometimes it's not quite 30%. Maybe it's like 27%, but we try to get pretty close to that.
Right. Yeah. Having that buffer is absolutely critical.
And sometimes maybe in the short term, it's not quite that, but we know we're pushing rents to a certain point pretty quickly to market that will be around there.
And that's one of the things we saw in the 2008 recession was just not having the margin. Right? Going back to the hedge fund
reserves, all that kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Buying at 98 cents in the dollar. It's like, there's no margin here for error or for unforeseen.
Exactly. And that's, I think, a lot of the issue right now and why people are being so aggressive because they're forecasting crazy rent projections, even more cap rate compression. And there's not a lot of room for error. And if things go the other way, there's going to be a lot of people in trouble. And then we'll be there to buy it from them.
Right. Because you did the right thing on the underwriting and were conservative about it. This has been fascinating. I love hearing what you guys have done, how and why you've pivoted, you know, and just kind of what your plan is for the future and what your outlook is there. That's been lots of fun. Thanks for sharing your story and the things that you've learned along the way. Here's the final four questions for you. The first one is this. What is one tool or resource you find you can't live without?
I would say my calendar. If it's not on my calendar, it's not happening.
Right.
Also, my CRM, I use ActiveCampaign and just makes it really easy to keep track of who I'm talking, when I'm talking to them, and like how they interact with me.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely a great one. That's ActiveCampaign. It's a very powerful suite of stuff that you can do with it, but it certainly takes a little while to figure it out. So
yeah, automation, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm kind of like into tech and all that kind of stuff. So yeah.
Gotcha. That's fantastic. Second question is this. What is one mistake you could help our listeners avoid? And then how would you avoid it?
I would say like one mistake that we made on one of our deals was there was a little creek behind the property and we didn't realize it was actually in a flood zone. So we actually needed flood insurance that was required by the lender and we would want it just knowing that, obviously.
Right.
And so I would say even if there's like a dry creek bed behind your property, always check. It's really easy to figure out. FEMA has a bunch of maps online and you can know. And there's like different severities of flood zones too that could affect the cost of insurance. So look that up.
Yeah. I mean, that's been there, done that, and it's not made the same mistake.
I mean, ultimately, this is a deal that we've done really well on, so it doesn't really matter, but it could take a hit that if you're in getting into a tighter deal, it could put you in a bad spot.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
I would say I'm pretty active on Twitter for real estate, and there's a lot of like younger people on there as well. And so I try to put out good information of value and connect with people offline in the DMs and try to help them out and lead them in a better direction because I felt like I had that mentorship with my family, but a lot of people lack that. And if you could help, like, I think a lot of times we feel like some of the things we know are so basic, but to other people, they're not.
Right. You said it, man. I commonly forget that. And this show is not a show typically for beginners. You know, we don't spend a lot of time on this show talking about you know, introductory terms or explaining some of the more elementary concepts, but you do forget. You do forget that maybe not everybody else understands the complex nuances inside of
like what a cap rate is, for example.
Yeah, cap rates or deeds or looking at transfer of deeds or chain of title. It's like all that stuff is just normal. And we're like, yeah, okay. And somebody else is like, what in the world? This is a brand new language. So that's fascinating. Jonathan, if our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you or what you guys are doing, what is the best way to do that?
On Twitter at JB2 Investments, or go to our website, JB2Investments.com. And then we have a blog post there that I talk a lot about a lot of these basics. We have an ebook on there. I respond to anything that's on there, and I'm really quick to respond and monitor that daily.
And is that JB as in the number two?
The number two investments with an S.com.
Got it. Cool. Jonathan, thank you for your time today. I do appreciate it.
My brother is my partner and we're both JB. So JB2. That's why. That's
awesome. I love it. I love it. Jonathan, have a great rest of your day.
Thanks. You too.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.